Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio. We're super excited to welcome John Dawson on the show. John is going to talk about this amazing musical project, this album that is out now, and it's all under the label Electric Forgiveness. What a good title. But this
Thank you.
album is something, it's called Original Score, and this is an album that you don't listen. Do not fast forward on the cassette. Do not skip. Do not pass go. Anyway, it's really cool. So everyone, I'm just going to give you the link now. Go to brokensoundtapes.bandcamp.com or electricforgiveness.com. But there's like all kinds of backstories to this. So welcome to the show, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, and sorry for the technical difficulties earlier in the week.
Ah, who cares about technicals?
Yeah.
The thing is, we're all here after Friday the 13th. So, as far as I'm concerned, the world didn't stop yet. We're still going. So,
Right.
it's all good. And listen, if you go through technical difficulties, and I think everyone is going through them, there's all kinds of server changes and weird stuff happening at the end of the year. It gets like this. I say that they just got to listen to your album and chill out for the night. That's what I think.
If they can listen to that album and chill out, they might have other problems, but that's okay too.
Yeah, listen, your album's a little trippy and it does get a little weird, but I like that stuff,
Oh, thank you.
but no, I mean it in a weird in a good way. I love to hear, like, I love the title Original Score because it's definitely something different, and I think we need that these days. It's something fresh, something new, and then at the same time it's like, yeah, you can sink into it and then go, what the heck is that? When you listen, you're going to go back to it and go back to it and go back to it and hear something different, I think. Wouldn't you say?
I hope so. It is actually the score to a movie. There's a script that we cooked up, and the titles on that album tie in with the script. And and as far as the music itself goes, we were trying to do something different. I don't see the point, and I despise it, if a band puts a record out and then the reviewer says, "Oh, it sounds like this band and this band and this band." If it just sounds like every other band, I don't even see the point of doing it. And obviously you're gonna, there's bits and pieces that are gonna remind people of other bands, but you should at least attempt to do something that hasn't been done 10,000 times. And you're not gonna succeed all the time, but if you have some originality woven into the thing, I think that's better than none. That's just
Well,
my targeted
that's the
opinion.
integrity. It's an integrity of art to me,
Well, we try.
So let's get into a little, give everybody your background from Third of Never, right? So tell everybody about Third of Never and then how all of this came to be, because you've got some amazing collaborators with this.
Third of Never is what you would most people would refer to as a more traditional band. It's guitar, bass, drums, vocals, keyboards. We were based in New Jersey for a long time. I would just get on the train in North Carolina or drive up, and people thought I was crazy for doing that. But the type of music I wanted to do, no one around here was interested in. And when I was in college at East Carolina, everything was either Phish, the Grateful Dead, or death metal. And all of those genres have their place. And I've actually, in later years, come to kind of enjoy the early era of the Grateful Dead a little bit. But when we in New Jersey, there was a band called the Gripweeds. They're still around. They're still putting out great music. Their drummer, Kurt Ryle, was just my favorite drummer on the planet at the time. And we were able to work with a few members from the Smithereens. They were up in that New Jersey mafia, as I call them. And John Bundrick from The Who, he's played keyboards on every Third of Never and Electric Forgiveness release that we've gotten together. But after three albums done in New Jersey and playing shows up there, it just logistically and for my own sanity, I had to try to move things back to North Carolina. And I was able to reconnect with our original bass player, Jody Haskins, who was the bass player when the band started in our college years, and Tony Stiglitz in Chapel Hill. He was an early drummer. And we also recruited Doug McMillan and Steve Potack from the Connells. And we used to, my buddies and I used to pile into a car and just drive all over creation to see the Connells. And the opportunity to be in a band with them was just too hard to pass up. And so that's been a real blessing. And the Electric Forgiveness record that we're talking about today was made at the exact simultaneously with a new Third of Never album. And that's coming out next year. For about 10 minutes, I was thinking about putting them both out at the same time as like a double album project, which would have been great to do, but calmer heads prevailed. I think if we had an unlimited budget, that would be a cool thing to do, but we don't. So we kind of have to go back into reality at some point. And but I bring that up because
How do you
there's
go to reality after you listen to original score?
well, you know, I guess it was kind of an escape from reality, a momentary, a 43-minute one.
Yeah,
But
but yeah, hey, that's
we
cool.
there's guitar and vocals from the Third of Never album that were sampled and used on the Electric Forgiveness record, and there's some electronic things on the Electric Forgiveness record that we've found out worked well on the Third of Never album too. So there's a lot of cross-pollination. We've got Steve Kilby from the band The Church. You know, they had their big international hit with Under the Milky Way, but that's probably not even their 30th best song in their catalog. We got Steve Kilby on both records. So a lot of people that I admire are in the band and in the projects. And I just had an opportunity to work with them and just kind of jumped on it, and without realizing how I had forgotten how much of a pain it is to try to promote a record, especially these days when everybody can just steal them so easily. But nobody ever accused musicians of being brain surgeons. So there we are.
Yeah. No, it's kind of, it's a wild world out there in regards to music. It's great, in that so many people can put out what they want and have
Right.
creative control, but the distribution's a little whacked,
I think I read something yesterterday where they said 125,000 songs are introduced to the internet per day, something like
Jeez.
that.
Well, that's
But
exciting, but it's like, and then it's harder when you do something like original score. So it gets more electronic, I understand, but it's hard to, do that marketing stuff where, oh, it's this, it's that, sounds like the stuff you don't want. Like, and I totally understand that. To me, it's like, everything's connected in some way in music and in life and in theme. And, the blues is connected to country and country is connected to the blues and stuff like that, right? There's always some kind of remnants and connection, but, it's, I feel like it's really hard to get it out there about, something original that's got the element of surprise that you have and something fresh. How do you, I mean, I know we're doing this podcast and everything, but how do we get people to get like, hey, do something completely different? Because we do get stuck in listening patterns, just like we do regular, life routines. That happens with music too.
yeah, I mean, it's easy to get caught in a rut. And people at my age, I mean, I turned 50 this year, and you know, I'm
Hey,
kind of a,
congratulations.
yeah, I made it. I made it. People I went to high school with, I'll run into them, and you know, I haven't, I'm kind of stuck. I'm probably on the spectrum, but I still hoover up music like I did when I was 18. But I'll run into guys or women that I haven't seen since high school, and we'll start talking, and they'll say, "Yeah, we're going to see da da da. We're going to see da, they're going to see the same bands they saw in high school, and they want to only hear the two or three albums they liked in high school." And it's something about when you get out of college that just stops. And I make the argument where you watch new movies and you watch new TV shows. I don't understand why music kind of gets frozen in amber, but I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just the way it is. But I'm always trying to find something. I have loads of old music, believe me, but I'm always kind of, there's a band out of Dallas called White Denim that I really like a lot. So I'm always trying to hold on to find something that's not, you know, as old as I am.
Well, let's go into, Electric Forgiveness, the title of that, the name of it's like it is a band, right? So hopefully you guys will do new, more of this and another
Right.
original score. And let's like, did the music come and then the film, was the film there and then you started writing around it? Like, how did that work? But everyone, we're going to have the link to the film. It's on YouTube, that you can watch, right? So it's like
Right.
a 15-minute. The music is 43 minutes, but don't
It's like
set
a
your timer, you know.
right. We made a like a 15-minute, 14-minute and change album trailer to try to condense down. It's basically a sampling of the album, but it flows into each other like one long track. Just the album is divided into 11 tracks, but if you just hit play and sit back, it flows without stopping. The Electric Forgiveness, yeah, this is the second one. The first Electric Forgiveness CD came out in, I believe, 2008, and the Third of Never, the first Third of Never album was being recorded in New Jersey. And the studio, the House of Vibe studio we were using, which is a fantastic studio. The Smithereens were also working there, and we got locked out for a couple of weeks because they had a deadline, and they were a bigger deal than us, so that's just what you had to deal with. So to keep from going crazy, I sent Rabbit, John Bundrick, some electronic music I had been messing with on my own just as to learn how to do it, basically. And I sent it to him just to see what would come back. And like 4 days later, he had sent me back. He had added so piano and organ solos to every track I sent him. So it was like, well, we got an album already. So it started off as something to do, but this time around, I went in with the intent of using a live drummer, live bass. We got Sarah Bell, who just did some incredible kind of
Oh my
clairatory,
God.
wordless vocals. Yes, she.
She brings in like this really like the other the balance to it in a way. Like there's a you know what I mean? She's got like an ethereal voice, man. She's pretty darn
She brings
cool.
in some of that beautiful spooky, as I like to call it.
Yeah, that is it, like
And,
the balance, like, oh, it's gonna calm you and then it's gonna go, yeah. Watch this. You know?
Yeah,
Yeah.
she was, and she did, she came in and basically improvised those vocals in like two sessions. Steve Potack from the Connells also played on this, and he did all, he didn't even want to hear the album because I said, do you want me to come by your apartment and kind of run through what we got? And he said, I'd rather just hear it fresh and react to it. And I would say 90% of the keyboards on there is just Steve hearing it one time, and he said, okay, roll it back and let's do it. And it's 90% of it is first take. Maybe one or two things were
Wow.
fixed, but that's very, very little. And
Wow.
Kurt Ryle is the drummer. He does like a 43-minute drum solo. Mike Kelly on bass. So we were very lucky to get who we got.
Wow, that's wild to do, isn't it? Like just to That's wild. You
Yeah,
know,
I
do you?
just I don't something I had like the 43-minute piece on like a Chaos Oscillator, which was kind of like the basic keyboard throb that you hear throughout that never stops. And then I was thinking, well, let's add drums and see what that sounds like. So we had the when we after adding the drums, I was like, well, let's just throw the kitchen sink at it. And I like it because people listen to it and they can't really figure out what kind of music it is, which is what I was going for. So
No, it did,
hopefully
because when I
it
first listened, I was like, what am I listening to?
works.
And it like picked me up and I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden I was on a different planet. Like, oh, we're going here now. Okay, we're going here. Well, this is cool. So I can't wait, because you know, I know the press release says, you know, you need to be with a good friend in a dark room and a lava lamp. I think that's pretty cool. And I'm gonna have a chance to do that soon. So I think we'll be doing this. And we might be a little happy while we do it. I don't know.
Well, hey,
Just saying. It could be one
yeah,
of
I
those
mean,
albums, and it could either take you one way or the other, you know, so that's up to you.
well, that's,
But
I mean, my, yeah, I'm sorry.
and no, to say that's a it's a beauty of it, you know. It's yeah, that can
Well,
I
I
like it.
appreciate it. I appreciate it. I mean, I'm a lifelong teetotaler, but I do like to listen to music that kind of puts you in a mood and makes you forget about everything that's annoying you. And I've had a
Right.
couple of people say they put this on and ended up, they were just going to listen to a track or two to sample it, but they ended up listening to the whole thing. So I hope
That
that's what.
has to happen. I think I'm going to use it on our next road trip, which is,
Oh,
well, we're on a permanent road trip. We travel full time. And right now we're actually
okay.
in North Carolina, believe it or not. We're in just outside Asheville right now. And I think, you know, we're about to go out into the mountains in the Pisgah National Forest for about a week. And I think I'm
Oh.
going to play it out there because we'll be in pristine nature. And I
Oh
kind of
my.
want to see how that feels. Like, I
They're gonna
understand
have
the
a
dark room and everything, but I kind of feel like it would be, because there's like certain times, and you understand this being the Carolinas, that mist that comes in, like in the early morning. Like, I actually want to do it at dawn and just see how my
Wow.
day goes after that. Yeah.
The veterinarian vets veterinarians are going to be overrun with psychotic squirrels who are gone crazy from hearing this music
Or
wafting
the
through the
ground,
mountain.
the woodchucks that you guys have out here? Yeah.
Yes.
Is it ground dogs or woodchucks? Whatever, whichever one it is
Well,
here. I'm from the West. It's marmot.
I'm in Bucklesbury, North Carolina. I'm closer to the coast, but my parents are vacationing in the mountains as we speak.
Oh,
So
wow.
we got it covered.
You're in Bucklesbury, and that's one of the tracks. And like, how did you even do the track list on this? Like, and listen, this is, I love the track list. Bucklesbury Nocturne, you know, that's, I was going, where, that sounds like a beer.
No, it's Bucklesbury is a
Maybe
little
I've been in
farming.
Asheville.
Bucklesbury is a little farming community between LaGrange and Kinston, North Carolina. I think our
Oh.
biggest claim to fame is, you remember the movie American Gangster, Denzel
Yeah.
Washington? The guy that Denzel Washington played grew up about a mile from where I grew up. And he moved out of town, obviously, when he was younger, but I was a writer for the Kinston Free Press, and I got to interview the real
Okay.
guy. And I started bringing up names of old men that would have been here around his time. I said, "Do you remember Bill Sutton?" And he said, "Oh yeah, when his family killed hogs, they always brought us a lot of meat. They looked after us, you know." Just talking to
Wow.
a drug dealer killer, like we were talking, at
Wow.
the fence post. But but the titles are tied into that movie script. There is a character called Rose. There is a guy who has a battery on his back. He goes floundering, and he uses a battery, car battery on his back to go floundering.
Cool.
Paul and Frank are the main. It's kind of a road movie, and there's a script for it, and we actually have potential financial backing. The trouble is, we're trying to find a director who will commit to do it. It would take probably 2 weeks to shoot the whole thing, and we get these directors who say, "Yeah, I want to do it." And then they just vaporize. And I've been told that's kind of how the business works. So I may have to end up just, getting a notebook and draw pictures and make an old flip cartoon to get it done. But we're going to somehow get it done.
That'd be cool. So, did you write it?
Yeah, I used to write for a newspaper, and I still write a column, a humor column on my Bucklesbury.com is actually it's called the Bucklesbury Gazette. I wrote humor and music columns for the Kinston Free Press for 7 or 8 years. And, I was lucky to win a lot of awards, but when I would take those awards down to the utility company to pay my bills, they wouldn't accept them. So I had to, make adjustments to, because if you got a family, if you're
Yeah.
single and you want to go live in your car and eat beans and be that stupid romantic crap, that's one thing. But if you've got a family depending on you, you can't really
Yeah.
be that selfish all the time. So we just try to balance the music stuff and real life stuff. And I still do the columns on the side. I have a few sponsors, but, and I put a few
Yeah.
books and columns out, but I always wanted to do something longer. And I've seen some really bad independent movies do well on Amazon. So my thought was, if this one is at least mediocre, we would be ahead of the pack. So
I
we'll.
think this would be a trip, man. I love it. I think this would be so cool to do. I mean, you're obviously super creative with, the music side and then the writing side, and then you're seeing the visual side too. It seems like you've got multifacets with creativity and not it's kind of interesting because you're not limiting yourself, but I always think about how sometimes in creativity we need to be limited to spur the creativity. So, like when you were talking about the smithereens situation, talk about high school bands, right? I grew up with one of those. Anyway, not dating myself, but I'm there. But when you think about it, some kind of limitation, or you're not allowed to do this or whatever. I think sometimes limitations get us to go outside the box. And that's how we create new recipes when we cook, right? So it's like, oh, I didn't go to the store and get, this spice. Well, what can I do now? And so that's kind of what I think is interesting about this, because you're so non-limiting, but it was from, not being able to go in the studio that you created a whole new thing, which is
Yeah,
awesome.
it was just from being kind of restless. And you have, if you have, I mean, John Bundrick is probably in the top three Hammond organ keyboardists on the planet. If you have access to someone like that,
Do
you
it.
don't waste it. So.
Man, this has got to be, I hope you do more of this. This is fun, and I really want to see it come out as a movie, because
Well,
I think it'd be really cool.
if you or anyone listening knows of any directors on the East Coast that are not flaky and will actually do what they say, send them my way, because I
I
have.
do actually, and he's a musician. I'm
Ah,
just
okay.
saying.
Well, we need to talk off the air then, because
I know. I was just as we were talking, I was like, this idea in the back of my head. Yeah, that I yeah, the documentarian, but really amazing. And
and
he's
the
worked with
third.
amazing he amazing musicians. He's worked with the top of the top
And
musicians.
the Third of Never album is coming out next year. Those songs are also tied. So that's sort of the soundtrack, and this is the score.
But but I
So.
think we're going this way too, right? So there's a side of, like, to me growing up, it was always like with your buddies going to the store, and then having listening parties, and just sitting and listening to the music was a big deal, as friends and stuff, and on your own, it was just to sit and listen. And now I think we're so high paced, like just fast. Everything's fast, fast, fast. Are you listening or are you looking at your phone when you're listening? It's like I talk about driving and listening. I do a lot of listening when I drive because I'm focused and I'm in a different zone. And the music is really, it's the same kind of thing, even though you have to pay attention when you're driving, but you're in
Have
a
you
zone.
ever experienced an Alamo movie theater, the Alamo chain?
No.
Alamo is a chain of movie theaters. I don't know how many there are. Maybe there's 15 or 20 in the country. I think Quentin Tarantino and the other director, Rodriguez, is his partner. But the deal is, you go into the theater and they play a film at the beginning to warn you. If you're caught playing on your phone during the film, they'll ask you to leave. If you're caught talking during the movie, they'll ask you to leave. And the fact that they have to do that is sad, but also I really like it. And I was praying that they would catch somebody playing on their phone, because when I'm trying to watch something with buddies, or I'm like, a friend of mine, I tried to show him, I love the movie American Splendor, with but the movie about Harvey Pekar, Paul Giamatti's in it. And I said, "You got to watch this movie, you'll love it." And about 10 minutes into it, he's looking at his phone, and I just wanted to just hit him with a suitcase. I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "You can't be following this if you're looking at your phone." But he was looking up Harvey Pekar on his phone while he was watching a movie about Harvey Pekar. The movie
So
wasn't enough.
you're missing the subtleties and all the
Right. So
clues.
I'm thinking about adding a scene to this movie where someone just,
Beats the crap out of the phone user.
Well, I was trying to think of a nice way to say it, but you just said it
Okay.
exactly what I
Oh,
was
sorry,
thinking.
but I just got a little riled. But we're all kind of guilty too of it, and it's the way the life is. And I just feel like we do need to have it. To me, what you're doing is an art project. And I don't like the word project, but it's art piece. That's better. Art piece of art, because it's multifaceted. And right now people are watching videos. We're very video centric. Look with all the reels and shorts. And no, 1 minute we need to do this much length. And I'm just like, can everybody get off the length thing? Who cares? It's like, I'm so sick of it. No, it's 60 seconds. Now it's this. Oh, the world of social media is like just crazy, but it's helpful, but it's insane. And when
Oh, a
you're trying to
friend.
do art, we need to be able to do it. So I think doing both and then going in that direction, it's cool that you're doing, like, I'm glad you didn't do it all at once. I think in a way people need to get into it and then, crave the next installment is my thought with what you're doing, just because I think it's unique and different. And I think, putting the video component, I'll talk to Nancy, my mom, she does all that stuff, and she does weird stuff. It's always that, like, we do all these travel podcasts and travel shows because we're really heavy on travel. And they'll put, like, travel writers will come back with a little footage and photos and stuff. And next thing you know, if they had like a wild cat or something, like a feral cat in a grease or something, next thing you know, some cat just pops out of nowhere and weird stuff and sound like she's a little twisted. And I mean that in the best way because she's listening around the corner. But
Right.
yeah, she's yelling at me already, but she is, and she's proud of it, honestly. But it's, but I think it's the element of surprise. We miss it if we're on our phones. And yet at the same time, we're all video centric. Like, how much can we consume? But I
Yeah,
want things where we slow down, like what you're making us do, and yet have that element of surprise to grasp us,
when The Irishman came out, the Scorsese movie, I just loved it, and I probably watched it once a week for a month. And a friend of mine was like, "Oh, it's too long." Now, this guy who said it was too long will sit through a 28-hour football game, but a 3-hour movie just ran him up a tree. I just don't, and
Yeah,
I
well,
do a
that's
radio show
interesting.
with him.
Yeah. Oh, you see, because we're still in that game, like that's how reality TV happened. It's a sport. And even it's a fake sport, I mean, it's a fake sport. We all know it's set up, even the Antique Roadshow apparently is set up. So like
Oh
that
man,
sucks.
you—that's like you
That
just told me,
sucks.
Santa Claus. Oh man. Oh
I
well.
love the Antique Roadshow.
I do
I'm
too.
weird. I'll sit there and I'll watch it like nonstop. And I don't do my phone on that because I want to hear every little historical weirdness. Because there's all these weird things we don't know about. Like in a museum, I didn't know they used like whale oil on this little tea, like little Turkish lamp that looks like a rock. Like, who thought that was important? It is. And we don't now look at us. We have Google turn our lights on and off. Like, what the hell did what how did we get there? So the Antique Roadshow to me is like, but it the setup is that they have, and it's like the same thing when we film. It's like you have to tell people, okay, we're going to film this recipe, and like this is kind of the wording. You need to be yourself, but like stop here, say, speak now, but it's still them, and it's not like this epic script or anything. It's, but it's that's how the Antique Roadshow is. It's just putting people in place and go, yes, I'm from Sedona, Arizona, getting people set up that way.
I do a radio show called The Brian Hanks Show out of Kinston. It runs on Monday through Fridays from 7 to 9, and our co-host on there is a guy named Jonathan Massey, and he's got a 2-year-old daughter, and he works at a bank all day, and his daughter is, by his own admission, a handful. And he has really gotten in. He used to make fun of me because I still like to watch Bob Ross. And how this is the guy who would watch football all day and loves superhero movies and all this stuff. He has gotten in. He doesn't even watch it with his daughter. He watches it by himself to calm down at night. That's his ver
Wow.
he that's his version of whiskey to calm down, is to watch Bob Ross.
Wow. Man, everybody's got their thing, you gotta do your thing. And if it's Antique Roadshow and or everybody's, I just think we do need to have these moments, but if it can be this artful expression that really makes your mind, because when you immerse yourself in something you don't know about, like I just want people to go listen to the album. Like, we're not talking about every track and every sound and everything, because I think it needs to be exactly what it is. Go listen, and that's the thing we've learned also on music podcasts. Though it's like, oh, well, this made me feel this and thought that, and then that ruins it for the listener, the podcast listener. It's like, go listen, and then it's for you at that point. It's what you make of it once the art has been formed, but been put out there. But if when you listen to something, what you've done, it has that element of surprise, like I was saying, which is so cool. And then it you take us into a little vortex of crazy and cool. It's crazy and cool all at the same time. But that makes people think, and I'm hoping, when you have art like yours, that it is spurs people to have more creativity in their life. You're talking about your co-host. I mean, if he's banking, listen, we need creative bankers. We need creative accountants and the tax. We have to beat the tax man, man. I'm just saying there's still potholes on the road. I don't care how much construction you have out there. There's still potholes. I know every single pothole across this country now because that's what we do. We drive full time. But yeah, I think creativity is crucial, and you can't be that creative if your brain is always clicking on the next social media post.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if it weren't for trying to promote the music stuff I do and my columns and whatnot, I don't even know if I would be on social media. It's kind of like a necessary evil. Now, I will say one of the positives is there's a lot of musicians and artists I follow. And so if they have an album come out or there's a new interview or a live performance, you'll get a little ding or a little link that says so and so, has a new album. And if it weren't for that social media, you would never know it happened because mainstream media doesn't care, if there's a new John Prine documentary coming out. But this
I
music
do.
group, right, but I do. So that's one of the good, I guess, is social media is probably 51-49. It's a television is the same way. It's just knowing what to weed out and but because I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I've been using social media nonstop trying to get the word out about this album.
Sure.
So
Yeah,
live
we
by
use
it and die by it.
ours is because I've had everything taken down from getting hacked while we were on the road, and trying to fix things from a rest area on a phone with bad cell reception was not the best thing to do. But I had to
Right.
do what I had to do, and then I got ourselves we got us like knocked off of everything, and I had to start
Oh,
over. But our thing has always been our newsletter. Like, we've been going for 26 years this year. Started in print, and you understand those days, right? And in print publications and everything, and going into newsletters and websites, and I mean, it's just been this evolution of what you can do. And the internet's cool. I mean, we have far more readers than what we could in printing, and but the newsletter's been interesting because we've also got this evolution of, generations now. But it seems to me that it's more personal in a way, and people open it when they want to, and it's kind of this connection, whereas, I know people get flooded with emails too, and we try to keep it low, like once a week. But social media, it's like you can't control it really, like what you want with algorithms. We're still having that human versus algorithm battle, and sometimes the algorithms really work, and sometimes they really suck. So it's kind of this still weird robotic thing, because we don't there's not enough well. They recruited people that, need jobs right now. Maybe it would work, but there's no way they can run social media and YouTube and all of that without some kind of AI. I mean, there's just too much being submitted. And I think that's what's happening to the music industry. All the music that's being put up on YouTube and Spotify and all those distribution outlets, it's all this automated kind of thing, which is another weird thing. It's weird, but it's good and it's weird. So basically, no matter what we're talking about today, it's all about the duality, right, of life.
Pretty much. I mean, there's no yes and no anymore. It's like we used to have four seasons. Now we have two. It's either 190 degrees or you're gonna be so cold you don't make a track outside.
Exactly.
That when you go to a movie, when in the 80s there was a definite
Oh.
good guy and a definite bad guy, a definite good guy and bad guy, and now, one of my favorite shows, Justified, a show like that, there's good guys and bad guys, but they both have their, well, he's not so bad about this, and the good guy kind of cut this corner. Everything's gray now, which that's probably a more realistic telling of how the world is. But as far as music, I used to like if we finished an album, there were, a handful of friends I would love to say, put a copy of the album in their hand. And now if you go up to them, hey, we've got a new album out. Well, they just want to link to it. If you try to hand them something physical, they just, look at you like you're from the Waltons or something. But I still
That's
do
how I feel
physical
about
media.
books. Feel that way about
Yeah,
books. And being on the road, it's like we can't have physical copies in the car all the time, And it's like, and we do so many authors, and we're reading them. Even Kindles, like I hate Kindle. Sorry, Kindle. Just my personal opinion. It's not fun. And you read it on your computer or your whatever screen you want to read it on. And it's just not, there's something tactile about art and having a CD. So with original score, tell everybody about getting it. Is it all streaming? Like, is one, how does all of that work for people purchasing it?
Okay, too. I recommend getting the CD. There may be vinyl next year, but that all depends on how everything goes right now. So, to get the CD, you can go to bandcamp.com. Excuse me, let me rephrase that. You would go to brokensoundtapes.bandcamp.com, or you can just go to electricforgiveness.com and there's links there where you can get the CD. There'll also be some CDs available that are the label we've been with for a long time. Through with Electric Forgiveness, that's Jam Recordings out of Michigan. That's jamrecordings.com. And if you go to thirdofnever.com, all of those websites are under one umbrella and they all go to the same place and kind of show everything and how it's connected. It is also streaming. You can download MP3s or WAV files from Bandcamp. So those are the ways it's available right now. Vinyl might be on the horizon, but we're definitely doing vinyl for the Third of Never record. And depending on what kind of reaction we get from this, or if we ever get to actually make the movie, that would all feed into whether we get to do vinyl for Electric Forgiveness or
What about cassette?
Oh, that's right. Broken Sound Tapes is also has a limited edition cassette version. You can either get it
No
in
way.
green or purple, I believe. And again, that's brokensoundtapes.bandcamp.com. And the inserts and the cassettes are signed by a band member. So you'll get an autograph by Kurt or Mike or me. A couple of us got together and just signed the inserts. So your cassettes are a thing. Apparently, we're in cassette week right now. I didn't realize that was a thing, but Michael at Broken Sound does very well with it. So I said, run with it. I mean,
Very cool.
if people want it on a cylinder or an 8-track, I'll figure out how to get it to them that way. Just let me know.
Wow, that's so cool though that to have cassettes back, because that's kind of my thought of this was like, old school, right? Where we had tapes and you just started playing it, and if you fast forwarded it, you're an idiot. Yeah, I'm talking about in high school. I'm not calling anybody an idiot. I'm calling, us and my buddies that I'm still allowed to call idiots, and they call me all kinds of really good names. But if you fast forwarded, it was like, oh, you've missed the whole point, because back in the 80s and 90s, like I'm going to say the 80s, early 90s maybe, we had such good concept albums. And the 70s did it too, right? And that's what I love about this, where you just push play and you go on a journey, a sonic journey, and people need sonic journeys. And so to have a cassette, it kind of puts you into that mode, and oh man, so you think cassettes are going to be like coming back out as much like vinyl as, 'cause you're one of
No.
the few people I know doing this, which is
I don't think
cool.
it'll come back as big as vinyl, but the fact that, but then again, Roger Waters he just released a horrible, horrible remake of Dark Side of the Moon called Dark Side of the Moon Redux. And it is awful. Don't waste your money. But they issued it on 12 color different versions of vinyl and cassette. So apparently cassette, I mean, and the last Who album that came out in 2019, which is a great album, was also issued on cassette. So there'll be a little niche market for it. Anything that helps music get out there and be on some kind of physical format, I'm all for it.
Me
So.
too. And not just, not even just the collection, you have to use them. Use
Yeah, I
them with
don't.
care.
Yeah,
Handle
because
with care.
yeah, if I'm not going to listen to, I st I'm still. When I purchase music, I'm probably still 75, 80% CD, but I do still get some new stuff on vinyl occasionally if it's not, the price isn't crazy. And, if I put on Quadrophenia by The Who, I've got to listen to the whole thing. I can't just listen to two tracks and stop.
No,
You got to hear
no.
the whole thing. So.
It's a whole, it's like that journey, it's a performance, it's a play, it's, I think the vinyl thing is exciting, and I think Jack White, I always talk about this on the show, whether people like his music or whatever, he really kind of spearheaded that kind of coming back. He was one of the main players in vinyl coming back, and like I was listening to him, and I think it was Rick Rubin talking about a podcast with Rick Rubin talking about, the fact that if we could get some of the bigger labels to get on the bus, the vinyl bus, the cost can go down, and for everyone, to actually make these, make vinyl more affordable for people and for the independent musicians. But they just haven't done it yet. And it's kind of weird. I think they're so stuck in meetings in these huge places that they never get these things done. I don't understand. Or they're just stuck with what they know makes money. I don't know, but.
I have a more cynical, it's an uneducated opinion, or my version is record companies. Everybody says the recording industry is in disarray. I think this is exactly what they wanted to happen. They can distribute this music and make money off of it without having to put it on trucks and send it around to record stores. They're able to, and radio, because our first couple of albums, if we got played on college radio, that's $2 or $3 per play. But now BMI doesn't sample college radio as much, and on top of that, they've lowered the rates they pay out, so people are streaming. So instead of getting $2 or $3 per play, you get played on Spotify, you get maybe 2 or 3 cents. I think the record companies are doing fine, and I think this is exactly what they want to happen. And as far as driving the cost of vinyl down, as long as you've got these college kids with daddy's credit card willing to go out and pay $30 for a Taylor Swift record, they're going to remain being $30 until that stops. The way I tend to go to a lot of flea markets and stuff, and you can go into certain places and buy classic rock albums for $1 a piece, and then you can go to a record store and trade them in for $5 or $6 a piece. And that's kind of how I keep up my vinyl habit. I just try to uptrade,
Yeah, it's wild, man. That's wild. I know Taylor Swift, man, and she's, annoying a few muckety mucks up there too, and telling people what's up, So
and
it's kind of interesting.
I'm not anti Taylor Swift, mind you.
Me neither.
I realize I'm not her target market, and good for her for selling the records and whatever. But as long as people are willing to pay $30, I can see maybe $25 for a double album, but I know how much it costs to manufacture these things. And if you're moving millions of units, it's not that you could sell it for $19.98 and still have plenty of profit. I'm not against capitalism, but I am against greed. So take that for what you
Yeah, just like the concerts, man. The big concerts. What
want.
I mean, that's a whole other show. Like that's a
Yeah,
I mean, that's a little crazy. That's insane.
A buddy and I drove 5 hours a couple of weeks ago to go see Tangerine Dream in Asheville at the Orange Peel.
No way.
And we got to interview them because I have a podcast, and I had interviewed Torsten from Tangerine Dream before. So we got there and did the interview with them, and that was the perfect venue. If I never had to go into a venue any larger than that again, it would be great, because it held maybe, I don't know, 3,000 people, 4,000 people. There was air conditioning. They weren't charging $28 for a bottle of water. Every seat in there was a good seat. I mean, I think my days of going to see mega big bands, I mean, I used to go see The Who and the Allman Brothers no matter what. If I had to crawl there backwards, I would go. But, REM is retired. As far as the big bands, I think most of my music concert attendance now are going to be places about the size that I play. I love a 1,000 seat room. That's just perfect.
It is. You know what? Because it's got that more that intimate feel, and you still have that energy because 1,000 people is still like a lot of people. There's
Yeah, I mean,
enough to be
that's
psyched up on.
probably the biggest crowd we've ever played in front of is maybe 1,500, 1,600. And obviously, if some guy came along and said, "Well, if you want to play at this festival for 400,000 people," obviously you would do it. But just in the reality of things,
I'd pee in my
it's
pants if I had to perform in front of 400,000 people. I think I'd probably throw up
so.
backstage, pee in my pants, have to do a
Oh,
wardrobe change, and then go out. Like, seriously,
I would be
400,000 people, that would freak me out,
freaked out if I was in the crowd. Being in the crowd would freak
I
me
don't
out.
like that.
Being on stage would be totally
Yeah.
fine.
Yeah, I
But
know, but I'd still have to pee and puke. It's the double P, man. P, puke, and then go perform. That's the triple P, you know. But yeah, I
Well,
think
that would
that the
just be called
most we ever
performance
performed
art.
for was like 4,000, 3,000, 4,000 people out on a coastal gig, and that still tripped me out, man. That was pretty cool. And people were like on a pier, like dancing and everything. I was like, well, that's pretty darn cool. That's good energy. It was fun, and we saved a band, helped save a band shell from being torn down out in San Diego. They were going to tear it down. This historic band shell, like Mary Pickford performed on there, and all these, you know, there was this amazing history to this band shell. They were going to tear it down for a timeshare, and the timeshare was going to take over the public beach, and you would have to actually pay for a pass to go on a public, what was a public beach. So, you know, we're doing a gig, and halfway through, we're like, oh, by the way, like, screw this, you know, just a PSA moment. You know, and but yeah, I mean, that was pretty bad, like what they were gonna do, and they got voted out, which was great. You have to raise your voice once in a while, you know. You can't let venues go away. And I think these historic venues are crucial to keep because there's just so much history. Like when you stand on a stage, when you know certain people have performed there, you kind of like want to conjure up their history, you know, you're that vibe of them and their sounds, and like so and
Oh,
so walked here, you know.
we used to play at a place in New Jersey. It's right behind the Stone Pony. It was called Asbury Lanes, and it's a bowling alley and a tiki bar, but it also has a
Oh,
concert
cool.
stage in the middle of the bowling alley. And it was just some of the best shows we ever had were there. And like I think we played there once, and they said, "Oh yeah, Dick Dale was here last week," and it was just an incredible venue. And Jen Hampton ran the place, and she was big in the art scene. So you had this conglomeration of kind of a artsy crowd, and you had rock guys in there, and you had, the guys who saw Swingers probably 28 times and had the $90 bowling shirt. It was just an interesting conglomeration of people. And I think it got bought up for, it may still exist in some form, I don't know, but that was painful to see that one go away.
Wow, that I just yeah, that's iconic stuff, man. We have to get to New Jersey. I've heard good things. We had friends in the Cravens band out in Lake Worth, Florida, and they're at a cat, and they used to go up to Boston and New Jersey from Florida. They just said it was like the late 80s that the music scene had changed, the 80s and 90s in Florida, so they had to go up, you know, for what was going on and musically. And it's kind of interesting that you were going up there too. It's kind of a that
Yeah,
the
I wanted
South
some
went
people.
north for a while, you know.
Well, I mean, it was just down here, all I could find guys who could play, but they wanted to play like Fish, or they wanted to be in Slayer. And you got bands up in Jersey like the Gritweeds and Defecting Gray and the Mod Fun, Successful Fate. There's the average bar band in New Jersey is better than most bands in the top 20 right now. It's just something in the water up there as far as that kind of music. And
That's
but
cool
anyway, I
though.
digress.
Well, everyone, you've got to go get this, okay? Original Score is the title of the album, and it's electricforgiveness.com is the website to go to keep up with them. And they're also on Facebook under Electric Forgiveness. And you can also keep up with Third of Never on Instagram and their website as well. John, don't be a stranger. What a fun conversation. We could talk all day about the music world for sure, but I'm very excited about your projects, your art pieces, I'm going to say, not projects. And hopefully we'll get that documentary or filmmaker. We'll connect you there, hopefully. And everyone, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. We're always playing music out here. And we want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast. Whenever we do good music shows, they're like, we want to be part. They're our good friends. They're in the Montford Historic District, not far from the Orange Peel, around the corner, and they go there all the time. They're huge. They're known as Mr. and Mrs. Wild. They, you know, if they're not running a bed and breakfast, they're out, you know, watching wildlife and out in nature or watching musicians. And we all decided that it's the same thing. You know, it's all the wildlife, right? So
Pretty
check
much.
them out. If you go to Asheville, go to lion-rose.com. So Asheville, North Carolina. Thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thank you very much for talking to me.